Greetings. This is Allison from the American College of Surgeons, representing the Resident and Associate Society. Today we are presenting Entering Residency, and as our speaker we have Dr. Nelson Royal, who is Assistant Professor in the Department of Surgery from the University of Oklahoma, Tulsa. Dr. Royal?
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. As mentioned, I'm from University of Oklahoma in Tulsa, and I'll be talking to you today about entering residency. Just briefly, I just want to make clear I don't have any conflicts of interest related to this for everyone. Specifically, what we're going to try and talk about today is, as you're entering residency, some of the general assumptions that you will hold yourself, as well as what the program will hold, to give you an understanding of what everyone has at baseline. We're going to talk about some of the short and long-term expectations that both you and the program have and where they sometimes differ. And then we'll kind of branch out from there and talk about what kind of educational schedules you should plan for, as well as the types of educational materials that you'll be planning for, mentorship, and the role that you should expect it to play, as well as professional development strategies, how to integrate into your local healthcare system, and some of the evaluation processes that you'll expect. And then finally, we'll talk very briefly about the lifestyle and social support systems that you'll need to be successful. And really, all of these things are critical towards your development as a general surgery resident or any subspecialty residency. You know, it's a long process, and in reality, it's hard to kind of codify all the factors that go into being successful in residency, but these are just general some of the basics that will help guide you as you develop your process. And it's markedly different than your experience as a medical student, with some overlapping factors. So just to start off, what the program assumes of you when you start residency is that you graduated from an LCME accredited medical school. And what that basically means in the modern era is that you're competent in certain milestones. And what the AAMC has actually developed are core and trustable professional activities for entering residency. And what these things are is there are 13 specific criteria that the medical schools now have to guarantee that you're competent in. And they're not overarching market or expecting you to describe, you know, the herpes simplex virus and targets for its treatment. It's more generalized than that. Talks about specifically things like gathering a history and physical, prioritizing differential diagnoses, recommending and interpreting common diagnostic tests, entering and discussing orders or prescriptions for patients, documenting clinical encounters appropriately, providing oral presentations, creating clinical questions, and having the ability to develop evidence to support your treatment planning, as well as discussing and with your colleagues patients and their ongoing care to transition care, collaborating as a member of an interprofessional team, recognizing a patient who requires urgent or emergent care and kind of triaging that patient, obtaining informed consent for both tests and procedures, performing general procedures expected of a physician. So that's not things like being able to do a cholecystectomy. That's more like suturing lacerations together appropriately as indicated, performing peripheral venous punctures as well as catheter placements, those kind of basic procedures. And then finally, the last expectation is that you can identify system failures and contribute to a culture of safety and improvement. So already you're kind of expected to be able to be at a high level within the food chain to be able to recognize that there are systematic errors in your current practice, and being able to lead a team to promote safety. And all these things you may not have necessarily focused on a lot in your medical school because it was very much on the medical knowledge. But a lot of these entrustable professional activities are actually more of a day-to-day important basis. So you may not have focused on this, and this is important for you to understand because the residencies are under the impression that you can do all of this. And then beyond that, because you're entering a surgical residency, they expect that you have some basic competency in surgical cognitive milestones. So entering your internship, you really they don't expect you to be at the same level as a third year or fourth year medical student. They expect you to be at the level of someone beyond that. And every program is a little bit different, so it's hard to tell you exactly which milestones to focus on. Finally, some of the other things that they kind of expect of you is that you're going to demonstrate those basic professional and interpersonal skills to be successful in surgery. So that means you know how to interact with the scrub nurse or the circulator nurse, as well as administrators on the floor, nurse managers, ICU staff. So if you haven't necessarily mastered some of those skills, those are things you should prioritize very early in the process of beginning your residency. And then beyond that, there's some other assumptions that the program has that are based from ACGME requirements. And those kind of transition over into what you will assume of the program. So for example, you can look at ACGME Common Program Requirements, which is Section 6, and they define both mandatory and suggested program requirements. And those kind of guide what services are available to you, what your work hours can be, and these change throughout your residency every few years. So it's important that you plan to keep track of these. If the program doesn't necessarily proactively inform you of these, you need to be responsible for knowing what the program must and must not provide to you. And for your sake, know that these program requirements are monitored by the ACGME during accreditation period. On top of that, you kind of have some assumptions that you're going to be able to achieve your American Board of Surgery certification through your residency. And that's really handled at the program director level, and you assume that he's going to do everything that's necessary to allow you to sit for your qualifying and certification exams at the end of your residency. Beyond that, you also have some assumptions that they're going to facilitate your ability to place yourself into a fellowship or a practice, that they will be timely and accurate in reporting all of the medical licensure requirements to the state board, FCDS, SFFB. You also expect that they're going to provide you an educational schedule and some guidance for your independent schedule, which may or may not be true. You also expect some mentorship opportunity. That is an ACGME expectation, as well as that they're going to provide you some ability to perform scholarly opportunities within the field. And again, that also crosses over into ACGME requirements. So beyond your background assumptions, where they may or may not meet up with the program, really what you should understand is what the program expects you to accomplish in both the short term and the long term, and what you expect short and long term. So for short term, the program expects that you're going to attend your conferences and their other educational activities on time. That means being early, 5 minutes early is generally the rule. Being on time is late, and being late means being irrelevant if you want to use the military terminology. These things are kept track. There are a lot of systems that use badge and systems, and if they continually see a trend that you're showing up even a couple of minutes late, that may prompt some kind of disciplinary action that you certainly don't want to start on a bad foot with your program. And that kind of action does eventually have the ability to be reported to a medical board. So keep in mind, even the little discrepancies that you think are silly or not worthwhile actually may end up having some consequences to you. They also expect that you're able to perform your clinical responsibilities in a timely fashion. That means rounds, putting in notes, and consults. If you're in a system where you share responsibilities for rounds and notes with other residents, that's very helpful. Make sure that you know the system and the process the day before so that you're able to accomplish these tasks on time. If it's where you're ultimately responsible for all the notes and rounding responsibilities with just senior mentorship, then again, that is something that you'll have to allot your time for. And also be able to perform consults in a timely fashion and run them up the ladder correctly. If the staff wants you to talk to them directly, then you need to be able to identify and reach the staff, who are sometimes difficult to get a hold of. So you may need their phone number if that's the expectation. And then on top of that, they expect that you're going to be able to develop asynchronous educational activities for yourself. And what that means is that when you're not on the clock, specifically working on a node or a round, that you're doing something to advance your knowledge base or some other skill level. And that means creating a textbook reading schedule. That means creating some kind of journal reading schedule, whether you choose typically one journal that you're going to read, and you read it once every Friday evening, something out of it. That's whatever the appropriate path that you choose to take. And then also that you have to go through a technical development schedule. And that involves things as basic as sutra knot tying skills, which is this delay between the start of residency and end of medical school as long. You probably need to spend some time practicing both of those. And on top of that, you need to work on instrument handling to make sure you're holding it both correctly and ergonomically correctly. There are laparoscopic skills, trainer modules, and exercises that you have to complete for FLS, and anything beyond that to actually demonstrate the competency expectations that you have to have. And then there's also now endoscopy skills, trainers, modules, and exercises for FES that, again, you'll have to meet, and you may need to spend more time than your colleagues to meet the competency that both you and the program expect of you. On top of that, you're expected to maintain a case log and duty hours both accurately and timely. Don't try to log all your cases at the end of the month. It's not going to be successful. They expect for you to be logging these typically at least once a week. So don't let your logs fall behind. That is a reason that some programs place residents on probation. And again, a silly disciplinary action that's easily avoided. And then you do need to be able to demonstrate the professional skills necessary to function in your hospital system. That doesn't mean that you're able to function in a previous hospital system where you trained as a medical student. This is now you're in this hospital system, and they expect you to be able to deal with the nuances of that system, including any cultural variances that you're encountering. And then also they expect that you're going to represent their system at both local and national events in a positive fashion. Long term, the program expects that you're going to continue to develop towards a level 4 or 5 across whatever milestone projections you have by the time you're done residency. Right now for surgery, it's competency is level 4. For other specialties, they go up to a 5. They expect that you're going to have some kind of mentorship relationship that guides your career as well as some of your decisions. They expect that you're going to be able to identify deficiencies on your own that you have across the board in cognitive, behavioral, psychomotor. That may differ from your own expectations where they'll assist you. And they expect that you're going to be able to meet all the requirements for licensure and board certification. They expect you to complete your written and oral boards, ideally. And they also expect that you're going to complete research projects, and they want you to emphasize publication conference presentation for both the reasons of your own personal career growth, but also for promotion of the program and its academic excellence. And there may or may not be expectations of grant funding depending on what program you're at. As far as the program, what it expects to change over time, it's realistic to expect that resident attrition in general surgery is going to be anywhere from 5 to 12% based on more recent data publications. And they also expect that program director and or faculty may turn over. Again, when you start off in residency, you may expect things to be the same for your next 5 years, but the program doesn't usually expect that. And then finally, they expect that the ACGME is going to change their common program requirements and maybe the ABS will as well during the next 5 years. And all these things kind of contribute in the perception of the program. And I put this slide on the Doximetry Residency Navigator because that's becoming more and more important, the perception of how good of a residency it is. And you can actually go to this website and pull up some perceived score that Doximity has produced, and some resident applicants are actually using, and they want their program to stand out as the best in the country. As far as what you probably are expecting both in the short and long term, short term, you're expecting that the program is going to have formal synchronous and educational opportunities like lectures and M&M, Grand Rounds, Journal Club. They're going to proctor simulator and skill sessions. Again, that may or may not be the case. There may be more asynchronous methods that the program employs. You just need to understand what your program employs and how you're going to accomplish the overall competency milestone achievement. And then they also have you'll also expect that they'll provide graduated independence in clinical and surgical patient care, meaning that they're providing a appropriate volume for you to be able to accomplish that. Again, different programs proceed along this pathway differently, and there is no ACGME requirement that they specifically let you start doing a case on your own at a certain PGY year. It's really going to be up to how the program faculty define you as being ready for that next step in the OR and patient care. So again, this is where perception meets reality, unfortunately, for a lot of residents early on. And you'll also, you kind of expect that you'll be able to maintain a case and duty hour log that should match up with the program. And then you also expect that you're representing the healthcare system and the program nationally and locally. Long term, you typically will expect that there will be stability. Again, we talked about that. Somewhat unlikely that everything's going to be the exact same in 5 years. Ideally, you expect that there's no resident attrition, and hopefully we're moving more and more towards that with remediation pathways. And then you also kind of anticipate that ACGME common program requirements will be the exact same. But again, as I mentioned, they will change, and it's your responsibility as a resident to stay on top of those changes. As far as long-term, what you kind of should expect to get out of residency, you should expect to develop towards that level 4 or level 5 that changes to that in your milestone progression. You should expect that you'll have valuable mentorship relationships, hopefully plural, that you have some faculty-led identification of deficiencies. But again, don't rely on the faculty-led identification of those deficiencies. Ideally, you catch some of them before the faculty even noticed them. And then you also should expect that you'll develop some kind of graduated teaching or leadership role within the residency, that you'll meet all your licensing and board certification requirements. And then this is where, unfortunately, nowadays with some fellowships and some specialties, not everyone's expecting to complete their written and oral board examination. And you may feel a push from your program to complete that when you don't feel that's necessary. So again, just know the difference between what you need to do for your career versus what's not. And then again, you should ideally try to focus on some kind of research project that's pertinent to your career plan. As now getting into kind of the more day-to-day and important parts of your residency early on is your lifestyle support system. And the reason I put this first is actually because this will drive your overall success more than anything else. If you're unable to maintain your support systems and your lifestyle quality of life during residency, you're not going to be as effective. And I think that's very well studied in the business sector with companies like Google, where they recognize that their employees need to be functioning well through good health maintenance as well as social support. And so really you can break these things, your lifestyle support systems, into things like personal health. So that means seeing your doctor if you need to see a doctor regularly, seeing the dentist. Try not to avoid doing these routine basic health checks or interventions that you need to do to stay functioning at your best. And the program has both an ethical and ACGME-based responsibility to your health. So don't ever let the strain or the pressure or the constant grind of surgery residency change that emphasis for you. You also need to focus on your family, and that means setting feasible expectations for when you'll be available. You've been a medical student for 4 years, and before that you were an undergrad. You're much more available than you're probably going to be the next 5 or 7 years. So let your family know up front. And again, until they're really there, they may not appreciate just how difficult it is for you to get free on their schedule. But again, try to proactively schedule time with your family when you know you're going to be available for them. And if you have a family emergency, let the program director know and your administrative chief know so that you can spend time and not lose those valuable parts of your life during residency. You need to maintain friends and colleagues. Try to meet new people and make friends. But again, don't overemphasize it. You know, you're in residency one time in your life, so it's somewhat of a difficult balance for you to maintain. And don't lose any of those friendships that you've had from medical school or previously, because those are valuable support for you and quality of life even after surgery residency. Financial costs can be a big stress for some surgical residents. Things like loan repayment, car or motorcycle costs or repairs. So these are all things that you may need to talk to a financial planner, either through your program. Oftentimes they'll provide some kind of financial planning, But also you could find someone in the private sector on your own that you trust for this. Things like budgeting for vacations at least once a year, as well as budgeting for spouse or child costs if that's pertinent to your situation. For housing, this is probably one of the most critical things early on. Make sure that it's in a quiet, safe place. Make sure that it's affordable for you. Don't reach beyond your budget because then it'll stress you in the financial aspect. And make sure it's accessible to work as well as to your friends and family. These are just somewhat common sense, but again, they become more obvious on the day-to-day grind when you're trying to recover from a long call night. And then again, social activities, coming back to that, whether or not this is a part of your life before binge drinking or other addictive behaviors, you really need to be cautious about those kinds of things as a surgical resident, because they can quickly snowball and become a worse problem for you as a surgical resident. If you have any of these problems, it's important that early on you try to deal with these before they affect your ability to function at work. And again, try not to prioritize fun over residency just because this is your opportunity to train. All these other things are important, but again, realize why you're in training. As far as educational schedules that you should expect, again, we're going to include both synchronous and asynchronous things. And the synchronous components will vary widely between programs. So that means, what does your lecture schedule involve? What are the topics covered on it? When are those topics covered? You have the ad site coming up in January of your intern year. That means you do not have a full year to review all the topics from SCORE. So if you're using the SCORE program, it's a year-long program. And you should probably try to make sure that you're going to cover the topics that SCORE doesn't cover before the ad site. Journal club schedule, try to find out when that is and if there are topics specifically, and you may be asked to present at the journal club. Know your quiz or test schedules. That may be both psychomotor, behavioral, or cognitive tests, but just know what your program tests you on. And then know your rotation schedule and try to coordinate that rotation schedule as well as your quiz or test schedule with what you're going to do on your asynchronous schedule. That means coordinate textbook reading. So find a primary textbook or resource and stick to that predominantly. The error that a lot of people make is trying to find multiple textbooks to conglomerate the best of the best, but really just try to find one resource your first year and stick to it. Have a home reading schedule, and again, base that around your responsibilities. And ideally, generally, people try to spend an hour a night during the week studying. And then try to bring materials with you to work that you can either review on your phone or print out copies. And just remember that your asynchronous schedule is downtime at work as well as at home. And then you need a question bank. In most cases, people use things like SCORE. There's a Hopkins review, Rush review. Not necessarily anyone better than the other. Just find a question bank that you stick to. And you can ask for advice from your local residents, and they can usually give you some advice. And then when you're on a rotation, make sure you talk to the staff to find out if there are any sentinel or critical journal articles or studies that you should really review on your own time. That can help speed and save a lot of effort in getting up to date quickly. And on the psychomotor behavioral side, the synchronous schedule is typically your simulator sessions or your skills or OSCE exam, and if you have any proctored sessions with the staff. The majority of this typically in programs will come in the asynchronous mode, and this is very difficult for trainees to catch up on. But you need to find what resources you have available to you at both the hospital setting or at home, and develop both a simulator or skills schedule around that. And that can mix in with your cognitive schedule as kind of a break from one or the other. And sometimes you need to create trainer models for yourself. That means having a suture board or an octane board or a vascular anastomosis trainer, or you know, you can get laparoscopic trainer kits from some of the programs. So just find out what you need to be able to accomplish your asynchronous schedule. And again, I have a slide here that just kind of goes over what a typical schedule for your education may be, where you start the day with pre-rounds, rounds, progress notes. And one, you have downtime waiting on the residents to come. Maybe you're reviewing your portable textbook or a journal article. Throughout the day, you're doing consults, going to the OR, following up on results. And again, you may have downtime where you can review things like that. Or you have a set downtime where you can go use a simulator. You'll eat lunch, and then in the afternoon, typically you'll do more consults or cases or rounds. And in those times, you can review more of your kind of asynchronous materials and maybe do some practice questions. And at the end of the day, you'll sign out, prepare things for the next day. And while you're waiting on your sign out, you have time to review, again, your asynchronous material. Typically, you go home, try to schedule some exercise of some kind, whether it's physical exercise, emotional exercise, something to get your brain free of the day, of the stress. You'll eat dinner, and then plan again for about an hour at home to do whatever schedule you have for that day. Talking briefly about mentorship relationships, they can be formal and informal, and this is a very large topic, so I'm not going to be able to go into a whole lot of detail on it, but generally programs will create and schedule formal relationships that require some kind of written verification about what's going on in the mentorship relationship. Try to have a mentor that has similar career pathway to what you want. That's probably more important than necessarily having someone within your field of interest. It is always helpful to have someone within your field of interest, but that can also be an informal relationship. And at your first meeting, just make sure that you provide them with a CV and a personal statement, as well as asking if there's anything else that they want to review on you before your first meeting. And you should really make sure that you have a clear understanding of what your current career goals are, as well as the time requirements or expectations the mentor has of you within the relationship. And then try to have a fair understanding of what you can and cannot expect of your mentor in the relationship. And then throughout the time, you'll form informal relationships and residency where you just identify someone of within the career trajectory of interest that is excelling in that aspect. It may be something like research or clinical or test preparation or professionalism or leadership. You can have informal relationships in all of these things, and I would encourage you to try to identify those as you go along. Moving on to professional development, this really runs the gamut. In your first year, it may be difficult to be highly involved in some of these as you feel the stress from other pressures, but know that there's local, regional, state, and national levels of professional development, and these range from GME-based activities at your institution, hospital committees at your institution, and then local associations and chapters of national organizations at the local level. And these all have opportunities for resident involvement and engagement and are valuable parts to your professional development towards your future career. At the state level, these typically are more senior level or junior or a few years into your residency opportunities. But again, there are medical associations at the state level that involve public policy opportunities, state committees for residents, as well as the state chapter of the American College of Surgeons, which is a very valuable thing for you as you develop along in residency. They include things like networking sessions at some state chapters, and so these are good things for you to be involved in earlier rather than late. And then, of course, at the national level, you have the American College of Surgeons, which is very valuable to you, and I would encourage you to be involved in at the earliest possible opportunity, including the RAS, which has various committees, as well as engagement opportunities. And if you feel the desire, then there are also RAS leadership positions that can be very valuable to your development. And then there are other specialty organizations that you'll want to be involved in, depending on your career arc, such as SSAT, STAGES, ASTS. And really for that, I would encourage you to discuss with your faculty locally to find out which organizations and what opportunities best fit your professional development. Within the local healthcare system, it's beneficial to you from multiple aspects to integrate well into the healthcare system. And this means knowing your hospital leadership structure. Is it MBA run, nurse run, physician run? What does that mean to you and how the daily operations and decisions in the hospital are made? Know important people within your hospital system. by name so that when they make a comment to you or when they come up to you in the hallway, that you acknowledge what role they're serving in. And then make sure you follow all the instructions that hospital leadership gives you. They're being given to you for a reason, and you're not above any of the decisions that they make. And then also know local free clinics or other support systems that are available for your patients. That'll be very valuable and make you an important part of the team and the system. At the hospital and state level, you have to know state laws as well as hospital policies for things you can and cannot do as a resident. You're different than a faculty. That means you may or may not be able to sign certain types of orders, have certain types of family discussions. From a legal standpoint, you need to understand what you can and cannot do with do not resuscitate, do not intubate orders. Some home health agencies will typically not accept resident orders for signing. And then, more importantly for you, you want to know what the hospital policy is for you to start a case. Whether or not an attending lets you, you will be at fault if the hospital policy says you are not allowed to start a case. Know what your early response team and code team's indications and what their roles are, because you'll both be involved in those situations. Understand what your patient resources are for complaints or disagreements with their care are. Patients tend to like it when you're able to refer them to some kind of mediator that helps cool off situations. From an ethical and legal requirement, you have to know what your language support services are and how to communicate with patients of other languages, as well as certain types of spiritual support services that can definitely help make patients have a better experience. And then from a general practical sense, know what the visiting hours, waiting room locations, and other local accommodations are for family when they come to visit their loved ones. And sometimes this will be pertinent. You have to know if their hospital has certain dating policies for professionals within their organization. That can be an issue that sometimes pops up, and you don't want that to affect your career. From quality improvement projects, you're mandated to be involved in these, but you'll certainly want to be involved in developing one around typically year two or three of your residency, and you may be able to be involved in other hospital QI projects that are ongoing by other professionals. And then from relevant professional points, make sure you credit other healthcare professionals for good work or successes in the team when you're talking to patients or their family. Try to avoid contradicting other team members, and make sure you talk to other members of the team before talking to patients about what the plan of care is. Take ownership for any errors or complications that happen under your services care, and make an effort to prevent repeating these same errors. The staff will notice residents who take that kind of extra time. Introduce yourself by name to the staff and nurses and always be available. And then make sure you develop a rapport with your senior resident. Try to offer to help whenever you can, and ask for some kind of feedback. These are the ways that you really benefit the most from your residency experience. And then kind of on the last bit here is talking about the evaluation process. And this is where programs vary a lot. There are certain things that are mandated, and some things that a lot of programs have just adopted on their own. Things like 360-degree evaluations. That means you're being evaluated by both the faculty, maybe the nurse practitioner or PA on the service, the nurses on the units that you work on, and sometimes even the patient. Know that all these people are able to evaluate you. So beyond just always trying to do the right thing, know that everybody has an ability to have their say or support you or unfortunately make criticisms of you. Know that your ABF clinical and operative assessments are a requirement and that you'll be filling those out throughout the time. Conference performance and attendance is typically recorded, as well as your operative log and evaluations of your operative performance. The AB site is an important assessment that your programs will use and fellowship applications will certainly use. And know that there are academic probation set for different performances on the AB site, and a lot of programs use the 30th percentile. So just know what those expectations are. Some programs have mock oral or written exams at different levels, as well as quarterly, semi-annual, or even annual evaluations by the faculty. And then there's a summative evaluation of you that's used at the end of your residency that's geared towards licensing, credentialing after your graduation. And then similarly, the program will have evaluations of them that go along, and those include things like you evaluating your faculty as you go through, evaluating your program director, and those are used very critically towards promotions of faculty, so make sure you do an honest evaluation. Don't necessarily blow it off or use it as a chance to exact revenge, because that impacts other people's careers. And then the ACGME has a yearly evaluation that's used towards accreditation if there's major gaps that are developed. And know that the ACGME kind of has already broken down their general competencies. Things have changed somewhat recently with the Milestones project from where it was when I was in training. Basically, now you have different parameters that the program will now rate you across, and faculty will rate you across. And it generally covers patient care, medical knowledge, professionalism, interpersonal communication skills, practice-based learning improvement, and systems-based practice like before. But now they have different specific markers, and they grade your progression. The goal is that you go from a milestone level 1 to a milestone level 4 and all these markers by the time you're done. And you'll get typically a handout of this at your yearly evaluation by your faculty. If you don't necessarily see it, you can always ask your program if they're willing to share that with you. But this is kind of a newer model, and these milestones will typically are projected to change in the next several years. So again, try to stay on top of what your expectations are across those evaluations. And so just to finish this off, I have a slide that provides kind of important timelines that you should expect in residency, things such as where medical licensing shows up, so things like taking the step 3 your first year, I'd recommend you take it during a vacation. By the time you complete that, you can apply for a state medical license and your DEA license. And then from there on, you don't have a lot of licensing requirements until you hit PGY-5. And I recommend at the beginning of PGY-5 that you go over and just identify the dates for the American Board of Surgery for registration and whatnot so that you don't fall behind. You have certain mandatory examinations like the AFT site. You have FLS that can be scheduled in your fourth year. A lot of people do it in their fifth year, and then fundamentals of endoscopic surgery is in your fifth year right now. And then things like research planning. Remember, this is early on that you have to identify what research resources are available to you at your site, as well as if you need to try to plan to go to a different site if that's something of interest to you. Typically, you'll identify certain types of grants that are available, and you'll start preparing all that in your second year as you move towards doing research at the end of your second year or third year. And then you'll be publishing and presenting at conferences your third and fourth year. And just by the time you're fifth year, you'll want to try to wrap up all your projects and coordinate rules on anything that's left over. And then as far as planning for post-residency, that really starts by the time you step into residency. You need to have your career goals and identify your local faculty that will serve as some kind of mentorship role to gearing you towards finalizing those career paths. Your second and third year, you try to identify the national faculty that may be of use to you or fellowship program directors. And then from there on, you start to try to network with those faculty at the national level, as well as demonstrating your ability to succeed in their fellowship. And then your third year, you really need to set actual expectations for fellowship or career-wise, meet with your local faculty, plan reference letters, plan applications, and then your fourth year is typically when most fellowship applications go out, and so you'll need to save your vacation dates or time off dates for those interviews, and typically by year 5, at the beginning of year 5 in August, September, if you're not doing a fellowship, is when you'll go out and try to find a job, and again, utilize local resources like your program director or whatnot and the American College of Surgery website. So that kind of summarizes general goals and hopefully gives some kind of guidance and structure behind a rather ambiguous period of time in your life. It'll be stressful, but it's very valuable. And just make sure you know the expectations and how everything proceeds, and hopefully this is somewhat useful to you as you move on to the next part of your career.
Thank you, Dr. Royal. If you have any questions or need additional resources, please look at the AC at the American College of Surgeons website, and you can locate that by going to www.facs.org. Thank you and goodbye.